proceed with the next case as we clear out here. Next case would be Alexandro Duran et al. Versus Rudy Ceregas et al. Mr. Spivak.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. Duran versus Ceregas, Your Honor. Barry Spivak, Your Honor, on behalf of the defendants, the appellants. First, we believe that Judge Grady erred when he did not find that, when he found that there was a question of fact with respect to Gonzalo Duran, the arrest of Gonzalo Duran. Judge Grady seemed to take the position that the fact that any force was used created a question of fact as to whether the use of force was unreasonable. For instance, to use it as a way of example to the way Judge Grady viewed it, he mentioned the fact that the only evidence as to force used by Officer Ceregas was Officer Ceregas' own testimony.
Now, you're challenging the way Judge Grady determined issues of fact, right?
No, Your Honor. We're challenging whether we have to accept the findings of Judge Grady on the issues of fact.
So you're saying his findings, taken as true, can strictly be reviewed on a question of law?
That's exactly true, Your Honor. And I'm sorry, Judge. I thought you were going to ask me. Yeah, that's what we're saying, and particularly with respect to the arrest of Gonzalo Duran.
Now, with respect to his arrest, what clearly... Go ahead.
I
have to think.
I was going to say by way of example
still on that last case. Yeah.
By way of example with respect to Rudy Ceregas, what he said was the only evidence with respect to the force used by Ceregas came from the testimony of Ceregas, that Officer Ceregas testified that he struck Gonzalo Duran once with his ass on the leg, and then he hit him with a closed fist in the head. That was...
Okay, now, what clearly established law would alert an officer that the use of force... Yeah.
I'm going to anticipate and say the answer is none. That the fact of the matter is that nothing would make an officer anticipate in these circumstances that he was using excessive force. You have a situation where the evidence is that Mr. Duran was resisting arrest. The evidence is that Mr. Duran testified that as the force trying to arrest him increased, he increased his resistance to arrest. The evidence is that Gonzalo Duran bit Officer DeCiani, although Mr. Duran said that he did that because Officer DeCiani was choking him, but the evidence is also that he bit Officer Vitalo. The evidence is that it took five officers to bring Gonzalo Duran to restrain him, and that this took place in the backyard in front of a hostile crowd. And I think those are the facts that Judge Grady needed to look at to determine whether the use of force was excessive. What Judge Grady basically said was, well, he hit him with a closed fist. So a reasonable jury could say, because he hit him with a closed fist, it must be excessive force. But that would be basically telling police officers that any time you make an arrest, if you hit the person, there is a fact question with respect to excessive force. You have to look at the circumstances. And the circumstances, I think reasonable officers, looking at what happened in this particular case, would feel that these officers did not act unreasonably, particularly because Gonzalo Duran suffered very minimal injuries. And although there was...
Judge Grady presumably looked at all these circumstances and made this finding.
Now, we may
not agree with it. Or we may look at it and say, well, I don't think so. But I'm not sure at this stage of qualified immunity we can just overrule that, of what he made certain findings based on his assessment about what conditions under which you can use a closed fist in this situation, et cetera. At least that's the problem I have here.
Not how I read Judge Grady's opinion, Your Honor. What Judge Grady said was that because there is evidence using Ceregas that he used a closed fist, a jury could conclude that the amount of force is reasonable. I'm saying that that is not the appropriate way to look at it. The appropriate way to look at it is what are the circumstances that led Officer Sergeitis to use a closed fist. I'm saying look at the fact that although it took five officers to bring this man under control, that he suffered very minimal injury.
But you're saying is it's not the appropriate way for him to make a factual assessment.
I agree. We accept his factual assessment in that he found, as a matter of fact, continuing with Officer Sergeitis, that Officer Sergeitis hit him with an asp in the leg. He found, as a matter of fact, that Officer Sergeitis hit him in the head with a closed fist. He went from those findings of fact to conclude that it is a question of fact as to whether excessive force was used. We're saying the notion of excessive force and qualified immunity is a legal issue. And he has to say, okay, accepting those facts, is Officer Sergeitis or the other officers entitled to qualified immunity? And I'm saying, given the fact that this is what Judge Grady found, that what Officer Sergeitis did, that what Officer Vitallo did, looking where this took place in the backyard, taking five people, the fact that Gonzalo Duran ended up with, I think, a bruise on his chest, a bruise on his arm, he complained of head trauma a couple of days later, probably maybe from the blow to the head, that is not sufficient to strip these officers of their qualified immunity. And I would cite the one case I think that is fairly close would be Smith versus the City of Chicago, a situation where the police believed erroneously that somebody was fleeing the scene in his car. The police chased the person. When they finally stopped the car, they grabbed the guy out of the car, they pinned his arms behind his back, they slammed his head into the hood. Because from the officer's point of view, they thought, well, this guy's leaving the scene, he may be dangerous, and they hurt him probably as much, if not more, than Gonzalo Duran was hurt. Still, the court said the officers were entitled to qualified immunity because objective officers looking at that situation, looking at a fight in a backyard in front of hostile partygoers, would think that this amount of force was not excessive. And I think to say anything different is almost saying to police officers, well, if this person resists arrest and he escalates the resistance while you are trying to restrain him, you are better off just backing off and letting him go.
You know, Mr. Spivak, I think that what Judge Mannion was asking you, and Judge Mannion will tell me if I'm wrong, and you will too, it was, aren't you really using the vehicle of the qualified immunity interlocutory appeal to raise all of your complaints about the district court's actions thus far?
No, Your Honor. We are accepting every one of Judge Grady's factual rulings. We have accepted every one of them. The one place, and maybe to jump to the McKinney case, since the court had an order with respect to it, the one place where I think McKinney hurts us is the fact that I think we can no longer argue that Judge Grady made a mistake to the extent he considered affidavits. And we argued the case both considering the affidavits or not considering the affidavits, so it doesn't change the jurisdiction of the court to hear this appeal. I think your opinion in McKinney means that we cannot raise the issue of the affidavits anymore.
So in other words, let me make certain that I understand.
Mm-hmm.
You are conceding at this time that McKinney prevents our consideration of your argument that the affidavits were improperly used to contradict earlier testimony. Is that what you're conceding?
I don't want to use the word concede.
And let me tell
you, but you are. I understand exactly what Your Honor is asking. I think that is what the McKinney decision goes to. The only reason I don't want to concede it is I would like to keep the issue open. We raised, ironically, in our reply brief, we had flagged the Ellis case, which the McKinney court had relied upon. I was disappointed to see that the court, in discussing McKinney, did not discuss what we felt was some contrary authority from the Eighth Circuit, the Hayes case, which in that particular case, it was an appeal from a qualified immunity, and the lower court had apparently relied on some inadmissible hearsay, and the Eighth Circuit said, well, we're not going to look at that inadmissible hearsay because it shouldn't have been considered. It appeared, though, it shouldn't have been considered by the district court below. It was kind of unclear, but it appeared to be contradictory to Ellis. I think that it is futile for me to ask the court to overrule McKinney since it was decided 2 days ago. I think that this case is slightly different, and I would offer up the fact that in McKinney, the issue, the Daubert issue that was raised in McKinney, is eventually going to be up in the Court of Appeals, obviously depending on how the case proceeds below, whereas I think the issue with the affidavits is going to die here if it is not considered by this court. But I do agree, Your Honor, that based on your decision in McKinney, it would appear as though I would be wasting my time right now arguing that the court, that Judge Grady made a mistake in considering the affidavits, and that the issue really now is putting the affidavits to one side, should have there been qualified immunity. The affidavits have nothing to do with the testimony with respect to Gonzalo Duran, by the way. There's no affidavits there. The affidavits come in to a certain extent on the individual confrontations, and they came in somewhat with respect to the search, the spraying of mace inside the home.
Now,
are you going to talk about that?
I will. Yes, Your Honor.
That seems to me to be one of the major
concerns here. That's an interesting issue. With respect to the search in the home, to the spraying in the home.
You know, when you consider the large show of force of the officers all demanding that the plaintiffs go into or remain in the home, and the use of the pepper spray against anyone who attempted to exit, how can we say that their freedom of movement wasn't at the very least restricted?
I knew I was going to have trouble, Your Honor, with you, because I know you had the one bad decision to me in Kernex. I would have much rather seen Judge Crabb up there, who was a little at a different opinion with respect to seizure. We think you have to start.
Maybe Judge Crabb would have rather have seen Judge Crabb up here, too.
No, it's a pleasure to see you, Your Honor. But I was aware, as soon as I saw your name on the panel, that you and Kernetz, you were the one judge who felt that there was, in fact, a seizure in Kernetz, which you may have considered a less significant sort of incident that happened in that particular case. In this particular case, I think you have to divide what happened here. I don't believe that when officers in a public disturbance is going on, regardless of what you want to call it, a riot, a melee, whatever it is, there is a public disturbance going on, and the police officers are ordering people to stay away. They're ordering people to go into their homes. They're telling people to go into their homes. They're telling people across the street to go into their homes. I think when the officers in this sort of situation are telling people to go into their homes, they're basically saying, go away. Stay away from the scene. I don't think that is a seizure. And I would suggest to Your Honor, and one difference between Kernetz a little bit here, is that the irony is that in telling people, go into your home, you're in some ways doing the exact opposite of a seizure. Because under ordinary circumstances, where do you have your most protection from seizure? It would be in your home, because...
Well, whether or not it's a seizure, is it an unconstitutional seizure?
Well, the issue really is whether it was the excessive force was unconstitutional. I don't think the plaintiffs are really raising whether the seizure itself was unconstitutional. The issue really comes down to if it was.
Well, I mean, Judge Grady talks about hurting these people and cursing at them and pushing them and so forth into the house. So I
Some
assume
people.
That he regards that. It's not entirely clear to me what his finding is on that point. And the pepper spray, you know, also gets injected into this this fact situation.
So I'm sorry, Judge.
I'm not sure where is the unconstitutionality in the picture?
I think the unconstitutionality comes in Judge Grady's view, is that if the people are seized, then was it reasonable for the two officers, and we have to look at the individual officers who are involved. This is Officers DeCiani and Officer Peslak, whether they violated the constitutional rights of the people in the house when they sprayed mace or pepper spray into the kitchen door. And Judge Grady is saying that was not reasonable. And under McKinney, we have to accept, at least to this extent, Judge Grady's opinion that they had no basis to spray the mace into the house. Okay, that the, or at least I think what Judge Grady said is that there's no indication that they were provoked to spray the mace into the house. So Judge Grady is saying, assuming they were seized, then looking at it under the Fourth Amendment, they feel that officers DeCiani and Peslak sprayed mace against people in the house and it was unprovoked.
I think that the fact that the officers sprayed under the closed door into the house is what, you know, probably...
Judge, let me just confront that for a second. I think the court has to look at what did officers DeCiani and Peslak do. Officers, the only evidence against them is the spray into the kitchen door. Judge Grady made a finding that there was no evidence that this was a conspiracy of sorts of all these officers to do those things. You have to look at what DeCiani and Peslak did. Taking Peslak, for instance, he sprayed mace into the door. I think there was one witness who said they heard people scream when he sprayed mace into the door. Our position is these people, when they were told to go in the home, are not seized. And maybe if, for instance, one person was coming out the door and was sprayed, maybe Peslak sprayed that person. If Peslak sprayed that person, and in the course of spraying that person, that spray somehow or other now ends up dissipating and going into the basement or the living room or a bedroom somewhere, has Peslak violated the constitutional rights of somebody who was not the target of that spray?
Well, I mean, we have to, you know, we have to think, does this shock the conscience? Was it done for any apparent safety need? Was it, you know, indiscriminate in that the officers didn't know? You know, when you spray into under a closed door, you don't know who's going to be victimized by it. I mean, you know, are there six-month-old infants in there?
First of all, Judge, again, you're talking about, I think we have to stick with Peslak and DeCiani. There's no evidence of them spraying under a closed door. So taking your question from the point of view that they sprayed into the kitchen.
No.
Judge Grady, of course, didn't look at it in terms of shocks the conscience. Judge Grady looked at it in terms of whether it was reasonable because he saw it as the Fourth Amendment. I think the question is, would a reasonable officer know that if he did spray somebody, either an individual at the door, maybe Sergio Duran or Moreno, who apparently were sprayed at the door, or people that may have been sitting at the kitchen table, if he sprayed them and that was wrong, does that mean he has violated the constitutional rights of somebody he didn't spray who happens to be elsewhere in the house? That's what I think the constitutional question is. And the plaintiffs may suggest that, well, you know, he sprayed because he wanted to hit everybody. There's no evidence of that. Then you get into the Rice versus Burke situation where the plaintiff is asking you to speculate, you know, what was he doing when he sprayed into the house?
Are you saying there's no evidence that the spraying was indiscriminate?
No, I'm saying Judge Grady found that the spray into the home was unprovoked, Your Honor. That was one of the findings of Judge Grady, and we have to accept the fact on this appeal that the spray into the home was unprovoked. It was unprovoked as to who they sprayed. There were two people that said they were walking out, and they got sprayed. It could be those are the two people that were sprayed by DeCiani and Peslak. If you spray them, does that mean that somebody who's in the living room or the basement now has a constitutional claim against Peslak and DeCiani? That's my point, Your Honor. Your Honor, I probably have a couple of minutes left. I'll reserve it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Serta?
May it please the Court, Counsel, David Serta on behalf of the plaintiffs. First, I'd like to provide the Court with background with regard to the state of the pleadings at the summary judgment stage. There were 80 plaintiffs, 16 individual defendants. Defendants filed 24 separate motions for summary judgment. Defendant DeCiani filed alone 5 separate motions for summary judgment. The facts that Judge Grady assessed were from 2 waves of summary judgment. There were 7 And then the defendants filed an additional 16 motions for summary judgment. In their additional 16 motions for summary judgment, they filed a in the record R-233, they re-raised the arguments from the first round of summary judgments, and they filed an additional Rule 56.1 statement. Judge Grady then assessed the facts, including defendants, plaintiffs' additional statement of facts, R-197, so that there were a host of facts that were before the court, including the affidavits. We argued the case three times. Judge Grady heard argument three times on the case. And when the defendants filed their second wave of motions for summary judgment, we objected to the filing because we thought then and believe now that what the defendants have done in filing these motions for summary judgment is to compartmentalize and sanitize the facts and not look at the conduct of the officers in the circumstances.
Well, for instance, Mr. Serta, do we have any evidence concerning those who were in the house when the officers converged and who had a desire to leave the house but didn't do so because of the actions of the officers?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, do we know who, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F?
We know people who were in the house, and we know people who were forced into the house. Those people have been identified. But to understand, I can address both what Mr. Spivak raised with regard to Officers Sergetis and DeCiani with the arrest of Gonzalo Duran and the pepper spraying thing by briefly visiting the facts, which are in dispute. The facts are that
are in dispute, did you say?
Are in dispute. Well, if they want to accept, these are the facts that should be accepted, as that were accepted by Judge Grady and presented to Judge Grady in argument. There was initially a call at the home of the Duran home for a car parked in the backyard, in the alley. Two officers responded, Cruz and DeCiani. DeCiani left first, Cruz left later. Incident over, cars moved. DeCiani returned to the scene without being dispatched. When he returned to the scene, and pardon my language here, the first things he said is, I'm tired of this Mexican shit. He then started swearing at the people.
That's undisputed.
That's undisputed. That he started swearing people. Well, they deny that. That's a disputed fact. These are some are disputed, some are not disputed, but they should be assumed true for the purposes of summary judgment and qualified immunity. There were 15 partygoers inside the Duran fence yard.
Wasn't there another call from a neighbor?
There is, Your Honor, and there's something confusing in the defendant's additional statement of facts. The defendant's additional statement of facts, R-234, in paragraph 6, notes that there was a second complaint about neighbors in front of the house, and if you listen to that complaint, it's about the house next door. That complaint went from a neighbor to dispatch. That complaint never went from dispatch to anyone else. The next sentence says, an officer, paragraph 6, says an officer asked the operator if she wanted him to run over there, and it gives the time at 45 minutes after the hour. That's after DeCiani went to the house, got engaged with a shouting match, was revving up a can of mace and spraying, threatening to spray partygoers, and Officer McMahon threatened to kick his ass, as more colloquially we'll say, kick Gonzalez Duran's ass, which is on videotape. There's actual videotape. That call came, there's a videotape of officers in front of the home. This call at paragraph 6 came in after that, after DeCiani asked for another supervisor. If you note the time there, and you'll note the time elsewhere where Officer DeCiani is asking for backup, if Next
you say DeCiani came back on his own.
Yes.
And then after other police arrived at his request, then whatever call, the second call that came in, all of this was going on.
Right. Well, the call came in first, but the call never went to dispatch to the officers. DeCiani went to the scene on his own because officer, it's not squarely in the pleadings, at the deposition of Officer Cruz. Officer Cruz had left the scene, but Officer Cruz told Officer DeCiani that these neighbors were complaining to him in Spanish that DeCiani was picking on them to lower the music because the music wasn't too loud. These Mexicans were complaining, so he came back, and the first words he said, "Are you Mexican?" And then it escalated. So Officer DeCiani's at the front gate, Officer McMahon's at the front gate, Officer Vitalo, these other officers, including Officer Sergetas.
But let's zero in on what the question really is here as to Duran. What we have to consider is what clearly established law would alert an officer that the use of force against Mr. Duran was excessive. The undisputed facts seem to me to be that Mr. Duran fled from the officers, resisted their efforts to arrest him, and even bit them. That's undisputed, isn't it?
No, that he bit him is not in dispute, but the context and when he bit him is dispute, and what happened and why Gonzalo Duran fled isn't in dispute.
But what case law would establish that the actions were excessive in light of that kind of resistance?
Those are not the facts, Your Honor. The facts are that going back to the officers and the outside of the front gate, partygoers inside the front gate, Gonzalo Duran is down the gangway. The officers in the outside of the gate are hurling racial epithets at the people inside the gate. The people inside of the gate are swearing back.
Okay.
There's no justification for use of force.
We've got to get this straight.
I'm getting there, Your Honor.
No, wait.
Why did Gonzalo Duran fly?
Did he flee from the officers?
He fled after officers
He flee from the officers? Just a yes or no. Did he flee from the officers?
Yes, after the officers started hitting his relatives with ass and beating them and spraying them with pepper spray in the front yard, he went into the backyard.
Okay.
And prior to that point, no officer had told him he was under arrest.
Okay.
So he sees, as close as you and I are, he sees officers without justification start hitting his relatives with asps, spraying them. He's never told that he's under arrest. He goes into the backyard. The next thing that happens to him is Officer Crummick hits him with a nightstick. He had done nothing wrong. And so once Officer Crummick hits him with a nightstand, he has the right to resist arrest. He disputes that he hit anyone, punched, or kicked anyone. What happened is they beat him, that DeCiani and Vitalo were hitting him with nightsticks and kicking him. Officer Sergetas is in the backyard. Officer DeCiani gets Gonzalo Duran in a chokehold. He is losing consciousness. Gonzalo Duran bit him on the inside of the arm so that he would not be suffocated. At that point, Officer Sergetas, who went in the backyard with Officer Crummick, the first guy to hit him with a nightstick for no reason, Officer Sergetas, a big guy, hit him with a nightstick and punched him in the head. That brings us to the people getting herded in the house. This is now in the backyard. These officers are in the backyard. Officers in the backyard are shouting to the people in the backyard, "Get in the house! Get the F in the house, you Mexican MFs!" And people who did not move quickly enough into the house were hit with asps. They were hit with nightsticks. Now, it says here, you know, I just heard there's no indication of, you know, that Peslak and DeCiani knew what was going on, who was being shoved in the house.
Your contention is that's an unconstitutional seizure without reference to the pepper spray. Is that
to hit someone? Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. You can't hit someone.
Okay, I'm trying to sort out this business of getting of the house question. Because you've got the pepper spray, that's one aspect of it, and you've got the things that you're talking about. So I want to find out what violates the Constitution.
There's no justification for forcing these people, some of these people, into the house. They're in the backyard. They're witnessing officers unilaterally abusing the people in the backyard.
Your opponent was suggesting this is sort of a standard police procedure to try to get people under control so they're not running all over the place, to try to get them into a house. And now the question, I gather the issue comes down to what were the means of getting him into the house.
Well, it's not just the means, Your Honor. It's the purpose of getting him into the house. And we disagree respectfully that the purpose of the house was then to punish the Duran partygoers because they hit him. They forced them in the house. They used racial slurs and obscenities when they did so. And once they get them in the house, they gassed them by spraying pepper spray underneath the door, knowing that that was going to torment the women and children. And there's testimony that Peslak sprayed a woman holding a baby, pushed her, and she was forced into the house. He knew what was in the house. Gonzalo Duran had bitten DeCiani.
Well, I'm not sure the pepper spray part of it was clearly established because, as far as I know, all of pepper spray jurisprudence involves, you know, shooting in somebody's face or in close proximity to some victim, whereas here it apparently was dispersed into the kitchen. I don't know who was directly affected by it.
Well, I think it's clear, Your Honor, that pepper spray, when sprayed, is a terrible irritant that causes choking and nausea, vomiting, as well as eye loss.
Incidentally, it was pepper spray rather than, we were talking about mace before,
right.
But we're talking.
It was pepper spray. Yeah, and the purpose, right. And the only purpose of pepper spray, and I think this is also not in dispute, Your Honor, is to address someone who is being physically combative with you. These people were forced in the house. Once they're in the house, some of whom are already covered with pepper spray, are then sprayed underneath the back door. It's not the kitchen, it's the back door. The other point, Your Honor, is that there's no question that these people were seized and this thing was malicious, is the people who tried to leave, choking from the pepper spray, were sprayed. They held them in there. This was here to torment them, and this was, again, Your Honor, by officers who were using racial slurs and profanities and who had beaten a number of people. Peslak and DeCiani were the officers came in through the front, and there's testimony, interrogatory answers, they were that those two officers beat and pepper sprayed persons without cause wantonly before they got to the backyard and held them in the backyard. And you can look at their context, what they did after that. I mean, after DeCiani was bitten in the arm, they were in a rage. They held them in the house. They entered into the house. People were then hit with nightsticks in the house. And so the circumstances, when looked at in their full context, and not just isolating an abstract, the isolated abstract question might have been, had some other officer, not these guys, come to the scene, not heard, not seen what had happened, sprayed pepper sprayed underneath the door because he was given a command, hold these people in the house, and sprayed pepper spray underneath the door. That might be an abstract question of law, and that would be, I think, excessive force because he would not have had any purpose in spraying pepper spray underneath the door because the people on the other side of the door were not physically combative with him. The evidence is that at the time the pepper spray was applied, it's hard to count how many officers were at the scene. There were two shifts of Cicero police officers. There's videotape, and if you want to look at the videotape and take a clicker and look at it, there's upwards 50, 60, 70 officers at the scene when this conduct is going on in the backyard.
50 or 60?
Yes. It was not just two shifts of Cicero police officers. There were police officers there, Berwyn police officers, other police officers.
How many are identified as defendants?
There were initially 16 individual defendants. Everyone else...
In addition to that, there were...
There were scores of others, and no one... Cases,
there were people at the party then.
By the end of it, there were, practically speaking, Your Honor, there were. And, again, most of the plaintiffs were women and children. And the spray was... Women were sprayed holding babies. Pregnant women were sprayed. This was a malicious and sadistic act by the certain town of Cicero police officers. There was no justification for using any force at all throughout this. There was no justification for seizing them. We call it a police riot. Defendants characterize this as plaintiffs being riotous and engaging in behavior against the defendants. There were all those police officers there. Only one person was accused of using serious physical force, Gonzalo Duran. They said other people were hurt, throwing things at them, hitting them, kicking them. They had 70, 80, they trapped them in the house. They had 70, 80 police officers there. They didn't charge anybody else because no one else did anything. And so the facts are starkly different than those presented by the defendants, and I think plaintiff's brief sets out the context of when the actions were taken. There was no justification for the use of force. The people in the house and in the property, we believe, were seized. And that an officer would have clearly, it was clear constitutional violation at the time, and an officer in the circumstances would have clearly known that his or her actions violated the Constitution.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Spivak, you got something to add? Whatever you have to add.
How much
time you got, Brian? You got 2 minutes.
2 minutes, then let me, because that's good to know. With respect to what the facts are before this court, we filed a Rule 56.1 statement, as we are required to do when we filed a motion for summary judgment. I hold that in my hand. It's in the record. Those are the facts that are in front of the court. The facts that are in the Rule 56.1 statement that we filed in connection with our motion for summary judgment, I don't have time to go through the different facts that I believe that the plaintiff has raised that are not the facts that are raised in this particular document that is in the court record. If he wanted to raise those things, they should have been raised in opposing them, so I would have had an opportunity to file any responses to it. So the only evidence is what is in our Rule 56.1 statement, which the court has.
Are there any one or two that are so glaring that you want to bring them to our attention?
Well, I guess what struck me is I don't recall, at least in our statement, that DeCiani said, my time is up. Oh, not the New Mexican ships or something like that. I mean, that's not in our statement of facts. I'm not saying maybe there isn't some testimony or something that was out there. But all this court has in front of it is what we had in front of Judge Grady. And Judge Grady pretty much went with what we had in our Rule 56.1 statement, which I think he was supposed to do. I just want to add, the plaintiffs talk about it as though it's some sort of a class action. Constitutional violations, they're personal. What an officer did is personal. And even with respect to the particular plaintiffs, I keep hearing, they couldn't. Who couldn't? Who is the person who did this? Who said they wanted to go out and couldn't go out? Well, that person may have a particular claim. But you can't be saying what the plaintiffs seem to do is the officers came in beating, hitting, doing this, and adding everything together. The fact of the matter is, you know why there were all those policemen there? Because this was a mutual thing going on. Why did the police call the Chicago Police Department and the town of Berwyn? Because obviously they're calling those people, not because nobody is attacking the officers. There's a mutual combat going on, and they need help. They didn't need help just to beat up innocent women and children. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.